Okay, so Line with Omid Bey's then. Line begins Aima Shakradami about the moral of the Omid. Okay, so we started a discussion about Chalada. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav said that, so you have a concept of Chalada, it's one of the five things that passes Shchita. So Chalada primarily includes basically where the knife is hidden under the simanim and cutting them like in the wrong direction. So Rav, so we said that the Rabbi Yehuda had brought in the name of Rav, that if you do Chalada between one simon and another, then it's possible. But if you do it under the skin, between the skin and the flesh, then it's kosher. So the question was, when he said Bain Simon L'Simon, we said in the Mishnah, we have the Mishnah already, on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, which we'll get to later, that says that if you do Chalada and cut the Simon from the inside of the neck, then it's Treif, Nevela or Treif, as the case may be. Okay, so the answer was, he said, because the Mishnah is talking about a case where he stuck the shchita knife between the mafrekes and the second simen and cut the second simen going outward towards the front of the neck. That for sure would be trefo nevela, as the case may be. Rav's case is you cut the first one from the front of the neck, like you're supposed to, then he put in the knife between the first simon and the second one, and cut the second simon also going towards the back of the neck in the direction that you're supposed to, but the problem is he started out from the middle of the neck, so that's the point, he said that's no good.
But he placed that in the beginning.
He started at the beginning, like he's supposed to, but then he took out the knife, then he stuck it back in between the two simonim and continued cutting towards the back.
He was allowed to take it out.
No, to take it out in and of itself wouldn't be a problem. That would be Shehiyah, which we're going to get to later. Okay, fine. So, the line begins at 8. So we said that if you put it under the skin, between the skin and the flesh, then Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav said it's kosher. However, Bei Rav Amri, however, the Yeshiva of Rav, which the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin means Rehona, they said, any idea? No, actually, if you put it under the skin, I'm not sure whether it would be kosher or not. So some Rishonim understand that Rehona is not just saying, I myself don't know. Fine, in that case, we have Rabbi Yehuda telling us that he knows what Rav said. Some of them in Farshim understand that Rav Huna, that Bei Rav is saying Rav himself said, I don't know. In other words, he's disagreeing with Rav Yehuda's version, with Rav Yehuda's report of what Rav said. Yeah, and in fact, that is why many of the Rishonim passed, beginning from the Rif, passed in like Rav Huna, that because we have a suffix and therefore it's true.
Because it's still right.
So now we have a question. What about, according to this opinion of Bei Rav, who's saying that if you put it between the skin and the flesh and start cutting inward from there, we said you don't know. We don't know, and therefore it's a suffix. The question would be, tachas matis mahu. Fine, but what about if you did the shchita under a cloth? The Rashi understands that the cloth we're talking about over here is wound around the neck of the animal. So in other words, it's something that will stay in place. It's not something that's just going to fall off. Other Mephoshim understand that it's like it's glued to the neck or something. So then the question would be, if we say that if you check under the skin, then it's possible, because that's Chalada, the knife is hidden, maybe that applies only to the skin, which is part of the animal itself. Maybe it doesn't apply to a matlis, which is not part of the animal. On the other hand, maybe if the matlis is attached by being wound around the neck, or by being stuck to the neck, or whatever.
Attached to the neck.
Because then the point is, even though it's not part of the actual neck since it's attached, maybe it would be possible also.
So you don't see anything.
That's the point. You don't see the knife.
Either way, you don't see.
The Rambam learns yet a different way, that the matlis we're talking about over here is not even glued onto the neck. It's just draped over the knife. And still the Rambam says the topic would also be whether it's possible. And the question would be, tachas semer mesubach mahu, what about also if the knife is under tangled wool on the neck of the animal? Same question. And the answer in both those cases is tasty. So again, according to many...
I'm wondering, mesubach, if it's tangled, the dechema should be no chasa. It should be possible.
Well, that's the question. If a matlis makes it possible, then maybe semer mesubach does also, but maybe not. So therefore, because you have the suffix, therefore what you have to do is you have to remove the wool or also the feathers or whatever in the area of the shchita in order that you don't have a problem with halacha. I don't know if they do a hair cutting machine doctor, but at least you have to make sure that the wool or whatever it is on the neck of the animal isn't tangled over there such that the shchita knife could be hidden with it. Yeah. And then Boyer a popper asked another question. Hechlid b'miut simonim mahu. What would happen if you did chalada in a minority of the simonim? What would be the din? So this isn't directly related to the previous question, but it's just another question involving chalada.
What kind of question?
The question is, Rashi understands the question is, We've learned in the first parak about hagromo, which is another one of the five things that passes the shvita. We had a whole discussion over there about if you did hagromo at the beginning versus the middle versus the end, when does it pass all of it? And we said, so there, hagromo is where you shech too high or too low on the neck. Too high or too low. Here we're talking kalada, where the problem is that the knife is concealed inside the neck. Yeah. So the question would be, Rashi understands that the point is the same thing. Let's say you did the shchita as a whole b'kashrus, but then afterwards you did chalada at the end of it. So now you could argue, on the one hand, you could argue, look, I mean, the shchita has already been done. Roiv of the two simonim have been cut. So what's the problem? After that, it's already considered kimachatik bas of alma. It's just like cutting dead flesh. On the other hand, we could say that not. We could say the fact is you're continuing the shchita at that point. Therefore, maybe it's considered an extension of the shchita process. And therefore, if you do chalada, it's possible. After you cut through roiv of each of the simonim, yeah. You could argue. You should argue, but on the other hand, Rashi is saying that the Gemara is asking maybe not. In fact, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman gives an explanation, a logical explanation, why we might argue, according to Rashi, that it's possible. Because we could say, thank you. We could argue like this. Why is it that if you shech through roiv of the simon as kosher? Because we had the concept before, rubrik kolay. If you shech through it, most of something is considered like all of it.
Yeah.
However, you can't say rubrik kolay where you actually have another, where you actually have rubrik kolay works where you don't have something else contradicting that. Here, where you have, you did rubrik in the proper way, and then you did a mirut of it, no, not properly, because you did the mirut of it with halada. Fine, but arguably you can say, therefore, you can no longer say rubrik kolay because now you have the rest of the kolay sort of like stands there and contradicts it because it was done with halada.
Yeah, but you don't need the kolay.
That's the point. But nevertheless, but you do. You need a rubrik kolay, and rubrik kolay can only work when you have a kolay that you can talk about. When you have the rest of the kolay like stands there and contradicts it and says no good because this part was done with halada, then you don't have rubrik kolay anymore. Then you have a roi, but the roi is not the kolay. So that's a logical argument to say why not. So therefore,
that would be an opinion that would not agree with the fact that a shchita is kosher after the
In other words, what would come out after that is you did roi. If you didn't do anything else there, if you left the animal to die at that point, or Rashi himself says later on, when we get to talking about Shahia, that let's say, for example, after that, you did something else, you did something else, not related to Shita at all, to finish off the animal, then fine. But here, where we're talking about, where you're doing something which is related to shchita, because after all, you're using the knife and cutting through the remainder of the simonim, but you're not doing it, but you're not doing it in the proper way, because you're doing it involving chalada, or later on, again, we'll talk about involving shahia, maybe you have a problem with it. That's how Rashi learns the suffix in the Gemara over here. Okay, Tosfos asks on that, a number of questions, and Tosfos has a couple of other explanations. One is that we're talking about over here, the miut kama, we're talking about you started with the simonim with chalada, and then afterwards continued with proper shchita, and that would be the suffix. According to Tosfos, there wouldn't be a problem if you did roiv at the beginning good, and then chalada at the end. Yes. You started with chalada, you start with chalada, and then you continue regular, that would be the suffix over here. Right, but then let's say you take it out afterwards, and then you start another cut. So yeah, you start another cut. So, yeah, let's say for example, let's say, well, we just said, for example, that it's also chalada. We said at least it's a sophic if it's chalada, yeah. If it's under a matlis or something. So imagine you started shechting under a matlis, under a cloth, then you took away the cloth and continued. That would be you did chalada at the beginning, for example. That would be one example of it. Okay. So that's one possibility that Tosfos brings up. No, well, that's the thing. In other words, we're talking about points that are ben atam in Tosfos, which we're talking about the topic of the Gemara over here, is you did chalada in miut simonim. You started checking, let's say, through one third of the kana and the vesh, and did that with chalada. Then afterwards, you continued checking through the remaining two thirds properly.
The vesh would be a problem, right?
But the kana, let's say, we're talking about, they checked through, let's say. Okay, then Tosfos brings from Rav Oshia, usually we're familiar with Rav Oshia from the Gemara, the Tana slash Amoro, who helped write the Tosefta. He apparently is one of the Balei Tosfos. I don't think we know of him from someplace else, but anyway, he explains what it means is, let's say, for example, that he shechted roiv of one simon, then he did chalada in the miut of that one simon, and then he shechted the second simon. So the question is, so in other words, he did, let's say, two-thirds of the first simon, of the kana, usually it would be. Then he did chalada in the remaining one-third of that simon. And then he did the entire second simon. So then that's
without
chalada, right? So that according to Rav Oshia and Toshvitz, that's the question of Hechlad
B'miyukunin.
Because the question is, again, because you could argue, similar to what Rashi is saying, that it's still part of the Shechita process, and you hadn't even started the second siman at that point yet, so therefore maybe it's a problem.
But the two simanim, you did right.
That's fine, but you just chalada in between, at the end of the first one and the beginning of the second one. So that's according to him, that's the question. And again, the answer is teiku. So therefore, so it comes out. Therefore, so you have a machlokes, then Rashi and two opinions in Tosfos. What exactly the scenario is over here? In practice, in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah brings that we're noyig to make it shreifa, regardless whether where the chalada was at the beginning or in the middle or at the end. One interesting thing in this connection, by the way, that I wanted to mention yesterday and I'd forgotten, is this that Rashi, remember, Rashi is understanding the suffix if the chalada was at the end. So one of the questions that Tosfos asks on that Rabbeinu Tam asks on that, is that you actually have a Tosefta that says the other way around. In connection, there's the Tosefta is talking about in connection with Shehiya, but still, this should be the same principle. Rashi actually brings the same topic later on in the Gemara, in the Mishnah and the Gemara regarding Shehiya as well on Daf Lamed Beis. So then you have a Tosefta clearly saying that's okay by Shehiya. Why should it be a problem by Chalada? So one interesting, the Tosefta says if you did roiv of the Kona, the Gargeras, in a bird, even if you finished it much later, Shechitah Tevshera. So in other words, Shehiyah is not a problem over there, so why should it be different over here? So the Rosh brings an interesting... Okay, we're also talking about both a bird or an animal, the same principle. But anyway, the Rosh brings an interesting idea on that. He says, very well, but Rashi might answer, usually we say a Tosefta is a very unimpeachable source. It comes from the Yeshiva of Rav Chiya and Rav Oshia, whatever is in it is accurate. But Rashi would learn, precisely because the Gemara is asking the question over here and leaving it as teiku without bringing that braisa, evidently from Tosefta, it means that particular braisa that the Gemara knew, even though we have it in Tosefta, that's not a particularly accurate one, and therefore the Gemara didn't bother asking it. So that would be an answer to Rav Natan's objection to Rashi, why you're saying it's a teiku. If you have a Tosefta, the answer is because Rashi would answer that the Gemara itself apparently knew that Tosefta is not a valid one.
Tosfos
answers. That's why Tosfos would accept that it is a valid Tosefta, and Tosfos therefore has a different explanation of the question over here. That the question is miut kama, which is not what the Tosefta is talking about.
How can you accept the
Tosefta if the Gemara doesn't? Tosfos would say the question of the Gemara is not relevant to what the Tosefta is talking about. Again, Rashi is learning it's talking about the same case. Therefore, Rashi would have to say that it's not a valid Tosefta. Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos would say that it is valid because that and the Gemara are talking about two different cases. The Gemara is talking about the beginning and the Tosefta is talking about the end. Okay. Let's go on. The Mishnah says, Hashoset Beis Roshim Ke'achad, if a person shechted two heads of animals at the same time, so he had one long knife and he shechted both of them, Shechitotik Sheira, the Meshchita is kosher. We learned before that by Kodshim it's only B'diezer to do that, by Cholin, in principle, of Machatchila, even as long as you have a long enough knife. Although, I mean, that's quite a long enough neck, a long enough knife. That's what the Gemara is going to discuss soon. That's what the Mishnah is going to discuss soon. Okay.
Also.
Yeah. Shnayim Ochtin the Sack in the Shoes. You have two people holding onto a knife and shechting. And we learned before in the Gemara, there's two opinions what that means. Does it mean that two people, each one holding a separate knife and shechting in different places? Or does it mean two people, each one holding one end of a knife? Anyway, also, afilo echad l'mayla v'echad l'mata, even if one of them is higher up on the neck and the other one is lower down, shchitas v'kshedah, and also the shchitah is kosher. Hit is a tarosh v'vatachas. If you chopped off the whole head with one stroke, which means, you know, it's like you did like this, like when they behead people, then it's possible, then tula, then it's possible, because that's drasa, yeah, that's classic drasa. What about if he was doing shchita? He is doing a back and forth motion like you're supposed to, or not back and forth. He did a sideways motion like you're supposed to. However, in one motion, he ended up cutting through the entire neck. And here you have him, a chalukas rishonim. Does it mean cutting through the entire neck, meaning from front to back, in other words, mafreches and all, or does it just mean he cut through the tzimonim with only the one stroke? Anyway, is it kosher or not? Depends. Im yesh v'sakin, b'loy saver, if the knife is the width of the neck. And we'll see in the Gemara what that actually means is the width of the neck plus an extra width of the neck. In other words, it has to be at least twice the width of the neck of the animal. Kshedah, then it's kosher, because then it's possible to do a cut through the simonim, or even through the whole neck, without doing drosa, without putting pressure anyway, or just by cutting, and the knife is long enough that you're able to cut and be able to get through the entire thing with one stroke. By the hema, which the same thing would be by an oath, but obviously for an oath, you don't need as wide a knife. Similarly, how you show that the hit is based Russian with a tachat, same thing, he's shechting two animals at the same time, and he cut through both of them at the same time. Same thing. Yes, the sack and the savar echad. If the knife has the width of one neck, and again, the Gemara means in this case it would have to be the width of three necks, the two necks that he shechted through, plus one extra one. The general rule is as long as you have one extra knife neck width in the length of the knife, then it'll be kosher. No, that's the point. In other words, so you have one animal here, you have a very long knife, which is the width of three necks of animals, therefore the knife is long enough that you're able to do one stroke like that and be able to cut through the simonim of both animals without doing jirasara. The Gemara says, when does this apply? That would only be if you only did a stroke in one direction, then you need the knife to have that minimum length. But if you do, like you usually would, back and forth, I feel a culture, then even if the knife is a very small thing, I feel a bit ismil, or even if you're using a scalpel, which is a very small knife, then the chitta is kosher, because even though, as the Gemara is going to say, the chiddush about a scalpel is, very often scalpels in those days, scalpels like little knives for surgery or whatever, very often they were made with karnayim, little decorative things sticking out on the end of the blade. Some of the poshim understand near the handle, others understand near the other end. Whatever the problem is, you'd think maybe you should make a zera, though it could easily catch on the simonim and cause chalada or ikur or what have you. No, we're not going there. As long as you were careful to not do that, then it'll be kosher, even though it's a very small knife. But again, only as long as you're doing halacha bava, because if you're doing only one stroke, then the knife has to be a certain minimum length. Otherwise, you have a possible shita, because inevitably you did jirasa. An interesting case that's brought up in Shulchan Aruch is, suppose the person only intended to cut the simonim, and he wound up cutting more than that. He wound up cutting deeper into the neck with a knife that maybe is not long enough. Maybe it's long enough to be able to cut through the simonim without halacha bava, but it wouldn't usually be long enough to be able to cut any deeper into the neck without jirasa. The Tavor Shor says, fine, still no problem. Okay, you could have. He didn't expect to. The fact is, it could have been an extra sharp knife, and therefore it was able to cut deeper than he thought. The Alfred Ebba says no. Unless you have the knife actually does have the minimum length to be able to cut without jirasa all the way as deep as he did, then it'll be possible because we have to assume that there was jirasa someplace.
Don't worry about the fact that the
knife is inside. No, because it's a beta shchita mirvach lovach. We've learned already that the shchita wound opens up wide and therefore the knife is not hidden within it. With all that said, by the way, I mean, even though we're saying that you can use a very small knife, Lamaita in Shulchan Aruch says that you should use a knife that's much wider than the neck. It is brought that for behemoths in particular, it says the proper width of the knife should be at least 14 etzvos, and they give a simon for it, the word of shatem bozeva akalsem, a pasuk that we've quoted in the first paragraph of Amar Sechta, where bozev is actually a 14. And so that's a remez for the idea that the proper shchita knife should be at least 14 etzvos long. Sigma says, where do we know this that we said in the Mishnah, that if you chop off the head, then it's no good, because that's Jirasa. Okay, Jirasa is halachal emotion. You see, but still, the Gemara wants to try to find a remez for it in the Pasuk. Because the Pasuk says, their tongue speaks falsehood, mirma means falsehood, like a sharpened arrow. And the point is, a sharpened arrow, first of all, how do you shoot an arrow? You pull back the bow, and then the arrow flies, and it cuts as it's flying along. The same thing, a shchita knife has to be that you're doing a back, and you're doing a motion, you're a back and forth motion, not a pressing motion.
You're talking about the reference to E.T. Stavos?
Tanan Rei Rabbi Shmuel and the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught a different source for this idea, because the pasuk says v'shachat and ein v'shachat ela u'mashach. The word v'shachat means to pull. B'cheinu Omer, and you have two psukim that express that idea. Number one, zahav shachot. You have spun gold, and gold that's pulled, because gold is soft. How do you make wires and threads and whatever out of it? You pull it. Therefore, zahav shachot means, so we see that the word shachot means to pull. But Omer, you have another pasuk, the chet shachot l'shonim mimadiva. The same pasuk that Shmuel quoted, that their tongue is like a sharpened arrow. So the Gemara says, Omer, why do we need two psukim to tell us the same thing? Because the first pasuk is not a complete raya. You might think to argue, zahav shachot maybe means shenitva kechotu. Maybe it means gold that's spun like a thread. Maybe shachot is meloshen chot, a thread. So therefore, no proof that it's actually pulled, because there's other ways to make gold thread also. In Parshas Kudei, it says, how did they make gold thread for the Mishkan? They took sheets of gold, and they cut threads out of it. By Yerachua, Tachah, as well, the kids are still in. They didn't pull the gold to make threads out of it. So Zohar Shachot doesn't necessarily show that it's being pulled. Tashmach, Chet Shachot L'Shonim, where we see that an arrow clearly is pulled in order to fly. This that we're saying, in B'Shachot Elo Moshach, it's brought in Chassidus, it's brought in the Chodesichus, it's Chelik Dalar, and it's brought in various other places, that the idea is that the deeper purpose of Shchita is Umoshach, it's to be Moshach, to pull the thing from Chumrius, from Gashmius into the domain of Ruchnius. That's the idea behind Shchita of animals, that's the idea behind a person needs to work on themselves as far as the Inyanim of Shchita. It's Ein V'Shachat, Elo Umoshach, the whole idea behind it is to be Moshach, to pull it up into Kedusha.
So it can mean both, or it means either one.
No, so it means that the Gemara is saying over here, it means umoshach, it means that the actual shchita process involves a back and forth motion, not pulling motion, not a pressing motion. But it also, I'll be clear, it teaches us the idea of what shchita is really. Because there's a shachot, because you learn other things from it. That's the Gemara said, why we need zahav shachot and also chet shachot. Because zahav shachot itself, you wouldn't know that it means necessarily gold that's pulled. It means gold that was made in
rejecting this pasuk?
Not rejecting this pasuk. We're just saying zahav shachot is not a complete raya, but chet shachot, the shrine of mirror, is a better raya for that. Okay.
So what is zahav shachot?
So zahav shachot could mean either one. It could mean gold that's pulled to make into threads, or it could mean gold that was made into threads some other way. There's no proof from this one way or the other. Okay. The Gemara tells the case, Rava have a bodic like gear of Rav Yonah bar Tachlifa. Rava would check arrows for Rav Yonah bar Tachlifa to make sure that the arrow heads are sharp and notches, that's the word I was looking for, but there's no notches in it because that would make the Tachlifa straight. And then Rav Yonah bar Tachlifa was able to use these arrows to shech birds in flight. He would shoot an arrow, and the arrow would shech the bird as it's flying. Which, fine, he said in the mission that's acceptable, as long as the arrowhead is long enough, and therefore, there we go. Well, so that's the question. The Dilma Ovid Chalada, maybe you have a problem of Chalada, maybe it didn't cut the neck from the front, maybe it went into the middle of the neck. The answer is chazinan gidfi dimapani, because afterwards we can check and find that the feathers around the neck have been cut. If the arrow had gone into the middle of the neck or something, the feathers around it wouldn't be cut. The arrow would have just come out the other side of the neck. You wouldn't have the feathers all around being cut. So if you see they're cut, then it means that the arrow attack is cut in that way. Okay.
What about Jurisa?
Since the knife, since the arrowhead is long enough, then there's no problem with Jurisa, as we said in our Mishnah. You obviously can't be pressing on it when you're after an arrow is shot, so as long as it's long enough, as long as it's moist saba, foot for saba, as long as it's at least twice the width of the neck of the bird, then you're good.
The arrowhead is not quite
the point of the arrow isn't, but that's the point. You said as long as the point doesn't go in, the point is passing by the side. But again, it's not the arrowhead that's doing the shit, it's the side of the arrow. The arrowhead is like this, so it's the side over here. That's fine. The head has to be 14 inches wide, so that's twice the width of the neck of the bird. How wide is the neck of a bird? The wider neck of a bird is a couple of inches wide. Fine, so then it'll be that long, yeah. Yeah. Okay. The question is, v'haboy kisri, what about you need to do kisri adam? And, because v'chora, you don't have that. Okay, so you don't necessarily have dirt underneath where the blood is going to land. You might not. Okay, and in fact, the Rashba says, you see from this Gemara, if you don't have dirt available for kisri adam, then you can't shech the bird or an animal until it's... The chitema de machasule, so you're going to answer, okay, no problem, you just put dirt on it afterwards, he goes and finds where the blood landed and puts dirt on it. But the Amr Abdeira Amarav, a sheikh at Sarchi is an opalamata of opalamaila. No, when you shech the bird or a wild animal, you have to put dirt below and dirt above. There has to be dirt there or sawdust or whatever, as we'll learn later on in Perek Kisi Adam. We'll talk about what things are valid for Kisi Adam, but whatever, there has to be whatever that is underneath it already. So you have to make sure that there's loose dirt there already. Shenema, and we know that because the pasuk says v'chistahu be'ofer, it says you should cover it with dirt or in dirt. The ofer lenema, it doesn't say he covers it dirt, which would just mean you have to put dirt on top. Ela be'ofer, melama chashuk, so she's an ofer lamata of ofer lamayla. So how does Rav Yonah bar Tachlifa make sure of that? The answer is the Mazman Leila offered the Kula Pisco. Pixo, it's really supposed to be. He set aside, he designated all of the dirt in that valley where he is going to be shooting these birds. So what does that mean? Rashi has two explanations. One is that ahead of time he would make sure that all the top layer of dirt in that valley where the birds are going to be flying would be loose dirt. And that way, fine, wherever he chefs, he's going to land on loose dirt, and then no, good, he finds where the blood landed and he puts dirt on top of it. The other explanation in Rashi is that there was already loose dirt there, but he would verbally say, whatever dirt the blood of this bird lands on, I'm designating it as of now that I'm going to use it for kissing that down.
At a point,
and then later on, he would go there and cover it with another layer. No. Well, not while they're flying. They're not constantly moving their heads. They're looking ahead to where they're flying. Yeah, that's the point. Bahadi Depara has it with flying, yeah. Okay, well, obviously he knew what he was doing. Okay, so one thing, so according to Rashi's second lashon, it comes out, therefore, that you have to verbally designate the sawdust or dirt or whatever that you're going to use for kissi adam. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings that opinion. L'chatchila, you should do that. But
during the course of this process, we have to hold the knife?
No. In fact, in the next Mishnah, we're going to talk about what happens if a knife falls versus if you throw a knife. No, you don't have to be holding the knife. Okay, now one interesting thing that comes out of this also is the Maharik points out like this. He says that you see from this Gemara another din as well. You don't have to be worried, he says, if you shechted a bird and afterwards it was dropped onto the ground, you don't have to worry that maybe when it fell down onto the ground, maybe like the bird's dead already, there's no problem with traces, but what you might conceivably have is maybe by accident you didn't check quite half of one or the other of the simanim. Then when it falls to the ground, maybe the cut widens up a little bit and then it looks like you checked more than half and you're not going to realize it's no good. The Maharik says, evidently from this Gemara, that's not a problem. However, different Achronim talk about that and say that's not so simple because, first of all, the case could be over here where he did actually check through, we can check afterwards, and fine, the entire simon was shechted. It's one thing the Alter Rebbe talks about this in your day, in Simon Kofei, that it's one thing to say, for example, that a cut that was, let's say, 49% might be after you knock down the bird onto the ground, maybe it becomes 51 or 52 or whatever, that you would have to be choshish for. But to say that if you cut through, that if you cut through less than 49%, that it would have later on, you're going to find that it's 100%, that you're not going to have. So therefore, if you find that the whole thing is cut, then you don't have an issue. That's one explanation. The shach also distinguishes between whether you cut the kana or the vesh, because the kana, since it has rings of cartilage around it, it's more likely that those are going to break when you throw down the bird, as opposed to the vesh is all muscular, it's less likely that the cut is going to widen like that. So with all that said, it says in Shulchan Aruch, properly speaking, what you're supposed to do is after you check, you're supposed to check whether the simanim were properly cut. And as I was showing you a picture the other day, what you do is you press the I'm all right. Practically speaking, what do? You press on the shifui kova, you press on the thyroid cartilage. That compresses the muscles over there. That makes the simanim pop out, and then you can see whether they were completely shechted through. And you can also see whether there was ikur, whether they got dislocated, because if they did, then they won't swing back in when you let go. So therefore, that's what you're supposed to do. No, inside out is another matter. That's if you have a problem, if you have reason to suspect that one of them, that the vesh was injured before the animal or the bird was checked. Here we're talking about just a regular shit, that there was no problem with the neck beforehand, but you're still supposed to check the simonim after that before you throw it down onto the ground to make sure, to be on the safe side, to make sure that there wasn't ikur, to make sure that you didn't accidentally not cut enough and now it's going to look like it was cut too much, whatever. No, because again, remember the arrow is flying in the same direction as the bird, or in the opposite direction of the bird, whatever. So it passes by the bird's neck and cuts it in flight. We're not talking about not going at 90-degree angles. 90-degree angles, you have a problem with your author, sure. No, we're talking about the fascist that it's going, you know, the bird is flying along like this. He was the side of its neck, and the arrow goes to the front of its neck, whatever. Actually, I guess it would be 90 degrees. Okay, because it has to be the front of the neck. Fine. So the bird is flying like this, and the bird is flying like this, and the arrow comes in the neck. Okay.
It's got to be budget after
after it lands, yeah. So that's the Maharik's point, is we don't have to be worried that maybe the cut became wider. But apparently, we see from this that it's not an issue.
Well, okay. Okay.
Okay, then the Mishnah said, Hoya Shoichet Behiti, Bechula. We said in the Mishnah that, we said, so if a person was shechting with a sideways motion, like you're supposed to, and he ended up chopping off the entire head, then it depends how wide the knife was. If it was wide enough, if it was long enough, rather, whatever, then there's no problem. But also, if it wasn't, then there is a problem. So we said in the Mishnah, as long as the knife has maloi saver, the width of a neck, then it's kosher. Amr Abzeda, so Abzeda says, that actually means maloi saver v'chutz l'saver. It means it has to be the complete width of the neck, plus an extra width of the neck.
How much?
So again, let's say the neck of the behemoth is seven esbos wide, then you need 14 esbos. Then you that's what that's so whatever it is, however wide the neck is. No, so you have maloi saver, you have a width of the neck, let's say 7 esbos, and then another chutz l'saver, another 7 esbos outside of that. Yeah. So now we have a question. What does Reb Zeder mean by that? Okay, so actually, he didn't specify that. Actually, let's correct that. Reb Zeder just said maloi saver v'chutz l'saver. He said the width of the neck and outside the neck. So we have a question. What does Reb Zeder mean by that? Does he mean maloi saver v'chutz l'saver kim loi saver? Does he mean the width of the neck plus the extra width of the neck beyond it? In other words, like I was saying, seven esbos plus seven esbos, let's say, to have a tray savory, in other words, the minimum width of the knife, length of the knife, whatever, has to be twice the width of the neck. Or maybe not. Maybe it just means it has to be the full width of the neck plus a little bit extra. Maybe it's a mashu. Let's say seven esbos, so it needs to be seven and a half, eight esbos, or whatever. Toshma, come, we can prove from the next part of the Mishnah. We said, Hoya Shoichet Behitis Shnei Rosh and Ratachas. If he was shechting two animals and ended up chopping off the both heads together, we said, Im Yesh Lasakan Lois Savar Echad Kosher. So we said, if the knife is the width of one neck, then it's kosher. So now we have to ask, Maim Lois Savar Echad. What do you mean the width of one neck? Even Lois Savar Echad with two lois. What do you mean? Only the width of one neck? That's going to be enough to shech two animals in one stroke? Impossible. If you're telling me with one animal you need at least something outside the saver, how could you think with two animals it should be enough with a smaller knife that's only the width of one neck? And obviously that's what it means. It must mean that you have one extra neck width beyond the two savarim. That means in the earlier case of the Mishnah also, it means the same thing. It means an extra neck width beyond the end of the neck. So that proves it. That, for example, if the neck is 7 esbos wide, you need 14, and therefore that's what the...
Three animals, three necks?
Four necks. You always need one extra neck width beyond the last one.
Okay.
Yes. So therefore, if you have two animals, you'd need, in this scenario, you'd need 21 esbos, four animals, you'd need 28, etc. By the way, you have an interesting machloek because we're showing him what happens if you didn't have a knife long enough. Which one of the animals in that case would be traced? The first one or the second one or maybe both? Which one? Is it more likely that there would have been dross on?
Probably on the second one.
You have different posts. Depends how you hold the knife, but also posts can talk about is it more likely that you would have done Zerasa, that in order to be able to cut the second one, the further away one, you must have done Zerasa, but maybe the one closer to you not, or maybe the other way around.
You would like to kosher the ones that you think are kosher and not the other ones?
Well, I mean, if you have a choice, you don't want to say that both of them are straight, right?
It's easier to cut the first one because
you're not the whole thing. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah that when is this all talking about? Only if you did a stroke in one direction, then we say the knife has to have a minimum length. But if you did strokes in both directions, then the knife doesn't have to really have a minimum length. We said kosher, even the ismil, and if you're using a scalpel, then it's kosher. Amar of Menashe, the ismil she'en like karnayim. Specifically, the kind of scalpel we're talking about would have to be the kind that doesn't have these karnayim, these protrusions sticking out of it. Because if you have that, then there's a real problem. You might not be careful, and you might accidentally catch them on the simonim and rip them or whatever.
Ismil
is a scalpel. Would you, if we're saying in the Mishnah that afilo kosher, would you be able to use a needle for shafting? A needle has a short tip. Amalei says, but that's a problem. Machtem mivzaboda. Yeah, but that's just it. Because it has a short tip, it's not going to cut through the simonim. It's going to rip through the simonim. That's no good. Okay, he asked him, what about machta de ushkifi, mahu, mai? What about a knife that's used by leather workers? So Rashi describes that this is a needle. It has a sharp tip, but also the it's made sort of like a little blade. The side of the needle is sharp to be able to cut through stitches. So it's like you can think of it as sort of so you can think of it as not needles in those days were usually a little bigger than needles that we have nowadays. We'll talk about that in the next paragraph when we get to Hilchos Tzeis. We're talking about dinim of needles that are found inside organs. Your typical needle maybe was like the thickness of a nail nowadays, let's say, but a machted ushtafi would be where, imagine like you have a nail where like one side of it is sharpened a little bit, is like maybe teardrop shaped or something, so that one long end of it is sharp to be able to cut stitches. That's machted ushtafi.
What side
of the nail? Right. Besides it has a sharp tip, in other words, but it also has a sharpened edge along one side, or maybe along both.
Two edges.
Okay. Oh, no, that's too pointed, though. You have needles that have a point at each end. That's something else.
No. I'm talking about a needle that's flat.
Okay. So actually, the Ram seems to understand over here that the needle that we're talking about over here has, it doesn't have a point. It also, it has a it has like a little flat on the end of it. So some Achronim understand the Ram to be saying different than Rashi. It doesn't come to a point at the end. It comes to a flat at the end. And others understand it similar to Rashi, that it means it has a flat along the side. Anyway, so what would be the din of that? Amalei, so Rabbi Menashe tells him, fine, Tanena, we learned in our Mishnah, we look kosher, that even if it's a small thing, it's kosher. My love, machzad urshkati. Now you have to say, when the Mishnah says kosher, v'pashkis, it means to include this kind of needle, because it has one end, it has one side that's sharp and good. It may be small, but it's not. The answer is not necessarily because lois, no, you could say the Mishnah means Israel. Maybe the Mishnah is still talking about a scalpel. So you're going to ask Ismael behead your katanla. The Mishnah said, sounds like they're two different things. The answer is no. Because Perushi Kamafanish. Because maybe the Mishnah is explaining what it meant. Maybe the Mishnah means, Afilu Kolshu, Afilu Ismael, it means, my Kolshu, what do I mean when we say Afilu Kolshu? Means you can even use Ismael. Not necessarily is the Mishnah taking a position on this Master de Ushkipi.
It's up to Ismael, not beyond.
Maybe. And in fact, Gemara says Machinam Mesaber. In fact, maybe it's logical to understand the Mishnah that way. The Iskapidat Machta the Ushkafi, because if you're going to think the Mishnah is actually talking about a leather worker's needle, this needle that has a sharp end on one side, then why would it need to mention it? Ismael at all? Hashka Machta the Ushkafi Shalya. If even that one is Mutter, even though it has a sharp point and it's a very smallish thing, it's like the shape of a nail, and it's kosher, Ismael Mibaya, how much more so a scalpel, which is an actual knife, just a small one, would be kosher. So if the Mishnah mentions only Ismael, the Pashkus, that's what it means. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the Gemara says maybe not. Ismael is Tzrichala. You could say that maybe the Mishnah wants to tell us a Chiddush by mentioning a scalpel. Maybe, in fact, the Machta the Ushkafi is, in fact, kosher. But the Mishnah rather mentioned in Ismael for a different reason. Because you would think to say like this. After all, scalpels come in two kinds. We just said at the beginning that Rav Menashe said that the kind of Ismael you can use is only the kind that doesn't have kaunayim. If it has kaunayim, then no good, because the kaunayim might easily catch on the simonim without you realizing. So, Sakhudai Dachamina, you would think to say, Libzer Ismael she'en le kaunayim, otu Ismael she'yesh le kaunayim. Maybe Midrabanon, we should passel during Shchita with an Ismael that doesn't have Tanayim, because you might mistakenly use one that does have Tanayim and passel with Shchita, Kamash Malon, that would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah. But not necessarily is the Mishnah taking a position one way or the other on whether you can use this leather worker's needle.
But how could you say that an Ismael with Tanayim would be kosher?
You couldn't, that's the point. But you would think that maybe once one with Tanayim is not kosher, maybe Midrabanon, you would be possible even if you use one that doesn't have Tanayim, that's very easily confused. And therefore, the Mishnah would be telling us, Kiddush, no, as long as you use one without Karnayim, then it's okay. Fine, but nevertheless, he may not realize, though, that there's a difference between one with Karnayim and without. He might think, okay, I'll use one with Karnayim, but I'll be careful, but... Okay. Mishnah says, Nofo Sakin V'shochda. Suppose a knife fell down, let's say a knife was lying on a table, and it fell down, and it shefted as it's on its way down, like the arrow that we were talking about before. Avol pisha shochta kedavka, even though otherwise it's proper shchita, there was no drafta, there was no nothing. Nevertheless, sula shenema, because the pasuk says v'zavachta v'achalta, the pasuk says you should shecht and you should eat, implying mashata ziveyach ata oichel, only what you shecht can you eat. So it has to be that you're ah. So when you mention your force, there is actually an interesting machlokas we're showing him about what would happen, for example, there's actually a Tosfos elsewhere that talks about it. What would happen? So, okay, we're talking about the case, let's say the knife was lying on the table and fell off. But let's say, for example, a person was holding a knife in their hand, and then they dropped it. They didn't mean to drop it, but it was in their hand, and then they dropped it and checked it. Would it be kosher or not? On the one hand, it came from a person's hand. On the other hand, there's no koyach gavri involved. So therefore, yeah, it was just gravity that made it fall. So you have a machlokas, we're showing him whether that would work or not. One thing that Tosfos brings, that the Tosfos brings about elsewhere is, it may depend on the question that the Gemara discusses in Bava Kamma, ishoy mishum chitav or ishoy mishum mamono, right? So when a person's fire gets out of control and burns somebody else's property, do we say it's the equivalent of like shooting an arrow into the other person's property or not? Or is it just chayav because his mamon caused hezek, the same as like his shur causing hezek or whatever? So that might affect this question over here, because you have a similar concept an issue, for example, in Bava Kamma, you have a case, for example, a person had a stone in their lap, and then they got up and it fell out of their lap and caused hezek, or even you have a case in Sanhedrin where it killed somebody. I mean, Machlokes actually have a... But the point is maybe it's a similar idea. The same way as they were Mechayev him, because it was in his lap, and were Mechayev him even Golos, if it killed Beshergiv, maybe by the same logic over here, he's holding the knife in his hand, maybe that's considered enough for it to be that he sheft it. Or maybe not. Maybe you need actual Koyach Gavra, that the person actually did some maisa to make it fall.
What if you change the case to say... He dropped a knife involuntarily on the cow of his friend. Would you consider that a shita or not? It is a hezek.
So then he might be chayav for the hezek. But the point is, again, if we say the shita is kosher, fine, shita is kosher. If we say that not, that's the machlokes of shohanim. Yeah.
No, because we're taking an example where there is a hezek.
Fine, but the point still remains. The question is whether it's a valid shchita. Do we say that once it was in his hand, and it's considered that it's valid, or does it have to actually be koyach adam, that he actually did something to make the knife fall?
Okay.
Right, that's the Gemara, yeah. So the Gemara starts off, timer did not fall. So what are we saying? The reason why the shchita is no good is because the knife fell on its own, implying, ha hi pilahu, implying, but if he knocked down the knife, then it would be kshera. The key thing is, it sounds like it would be kosher, even if he didn't mean to shaft. Let's say he knocked down the knife just in order to knock it down. He's throwing knives or whatever, and he happened to shaft. The Mishnah seems to be implying that would be okay, even though he had no intention of shafting. Well, which tana is it that says that you don't require kavana for it to be a valid shchita? The Rabbah says specifically that would be according to Rav Nosson. The Tani Oshia Zeira de Min Chavraya, because we find that Oshia Zeira de Min Chavraya, Rashi has two explanations. One is Zeira de Min Chavraya, the youngest Talmud in the Yeshiva, and the other one is that his name was Oshia Zeira, and he's one of the Bnei HaYeshiva. Anyway, so he taught a Braisa. Zorak sat in the night, Lanoya Sabakoito. Suppose a person threw a knife to stick it into the wall. So like, you know, you have nowadays, like by circuses or whatever, where they do knife throwing. So he threw a knife, not intending to shecht, just intending to stick it into the wall. The hoch of a shoch the kadavka, and in the event it ended up shechting an animal as it went along. Rav Nosson machshir v'chacham imposim. Rav Nosson says it's kosher because there was koyach adam, and according to the chacham, it's possible because he didn't intend to shecht. So therefore, we see that our Mishnah is according to Rav Nosson.
Could you put it fell down. Madach v'get, he threw it down.
That's the point. Only if it fell is it possible. But if he knocked it down, even though, yeah, that would be kosher.
One second. You're comparing two things that are not the same.
Why?
Because the knife fell by itself.
Right.
This example, he had an intent to throw the knife, but not to shake.
That's fine.
It's not the same.
No. 1 second. So in other words, you have a few possible cases. You can have where you intended to shake, obviously that's a valid shaker. You can have where you threw the knife and didn't intend
it to throw.
You intended to throw, but not to shake.
And he didn't have either.
But having in mind to throw the knife is the same as having in mind to knock down the knife. It's the same thing.
When the knife fell,
it's definitely possible. That's what we're saying. Even Rav Nosson would agree that's possible. But if he threw it or knocked it down or whatever, intending to knock it down, but not intending to shech, Rav Nosson would say it's kosher. The Chacham would say it's possible. And the Gemara continues, Hu Toni Lava Hu Amala, this Oishi is the Ira de Min Chavraya, he taught this Braisa, and he also said, you should know, Halacha could have nothing. In fact, the Halacha is like Rav Nosson in that as long as it was Koyach Adam, then we don't care whether we had it in mind or not. Okay, so the question is, Right, the Chum Halacha is Lachem Nachman over here, right? Especially since we have a Stam Mishnah. Okay. So the question is, V'ha'omer Rava Chodazina. The question is, Rava is telling us that we can see from analyzing our Mishnah that it's like Rav Nathan, but didn't Rava already tell us that in a different context? This now, we learned in the first Mishnah of our Masechta, we said that any of them, any of the psulim that I mentioned in that Mishnah, including a cheresh shirt of a cotton, if they shechted, and other people are watching them to make sure that they didn't ruin the shechita, they didn't do drosser or shahir or what have you, shechitas and shechita, then we said the shechita is kosher, and we say on that Mishnah, man tana deleboi kavana la shechita, which tana is it that says you don't need kavana for shechita, but omar rava rav nothing. He and rava says that's according to rav nothing. So we already find earlier that we have a Stam Mishnah, which Rava has explained to us as the coin of Nachman. Why does Rava need to tell us again over here that we have another Stam Mishnah like Rav Nathan? In other words, according to both Rashi and Tosfos, the question is not so much why the Mishnah is repeating it. Because after all, the Mishnah itself only mentioned the case where the knife fell. The Mishnah didn't say anything about a person knocking down the knife. Rava is medayek from the Mishnah. But the question is, why does Rava need to be medayek from the Mishnah, let us like nothing, if he already established before that we have Mishnah and feel like Rav Nathan? Did I mention Rava? Okay, Rav Nathan, yeah. So now, again, according to Rashi and according to Tosfos, the question is not on the Mishnah, why it's repeating. The question is on Rava, why you have to tell us twice the Mishnah is like Rav Nathan. Okay. The answer is, Tzricha. No, because we need Rava to tell us in both cases. The Yashmin and Hossam, if he only told us in connection with the first Perek, in connection with the Chere Shoyt of a cotton, you would say, fine, Mishrim to come Chavim, Mishrim Chatzicha Ba'olam. Because we have to have, there's another, we were talking before about the distinction between whether the person means the Shech, versus there was no koyach adam at all, versus the middle ground that we're talking about over here, where he meant to throw it, but he didn't mean to do shechita. But within that itself, you could distinguish between a person who may not intend to shech, because the cheresh shirt of a cotton and he doesn't have daf, but at least he has intention to cut something, versus where the person doesn't intend to cut anything, he's just standing intending to throw the knife. So if we were only told by the cheresh shirt of a cotton, you would say, mishum b'chamachav and mishum chatzicha b'olam. Because after all, the cheresh shirt of a cotton needs to cut something. So therefore, fine, that's enough kavana. Rav Nathan might say that's enough kavana. Avol ha'cha b'loy kamachav, and here he doesn't intend to cut anything, because all he's trying to do is throw the knife into the wall, or knock it down from the table that it was, or whatever. So maybe aim aloy, maybe even Rav Nathan would say it's no good. The Iyashmin and ha'cha, on the other hand, if we mention it over here, you would say, you know why Rav Nathan says it's kosher over here? Mishum d'ka'osim k'ayach ben das. Because after all, who is the one who threw the knife, or knocked it down, or whatever, was a ben das, the person who has das. But over there, there's no bendas involved, because the cheresh shirt of a cotton shechting, and only a pikeach watching him, aim aloy. So therefore, we need both cases to tell us that Rav Nathan would say it's kosher in both cases.
Okay.
Whether the person who was doing it had das or not, and whether there was any intention to do cutting or not. Okay.
That's all.
Okay. Itmar. So now we have another discussion that is going to eventually relate back to this question about shechita with and without kavana. Nida shenensa v'tavla. If a nida, where we know she has to tovel in a mikveh to be, and remember, when we talk about nida, when we get to Be'ez Hashem in a year from now, when we get to Masechta Nida, we'll be talking about in the Mishnayos and in the Gemara in Nida, whatever we talk about in Nida becoming tahor, there's always two different purposes for which she needs to be tahor. Number one, to be mutter to have relations with her husband. But number two, like any other tamei, to be able to eat truma, kodshim, to be able to enter into bechmes, etc. Nida shenens of a tovla. So if a nida was forced to tovel, and we'll see later on the days we'll talk about in what way was she forced. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, tahor la beita, she is tahor insofar as her household is concerned. In other words, she's allowed to have relations with her husband. But after a lechel b'truma, but she's not allowed to eat truma. Because for truma, you need kavana in the tefila. Mind you, Tosfos says it's not only truma, she's also even offered to eat maaser. The reason why the Gemara mentions truma, Tosfos says, is because maaser, whenever we talk about maaser, and we talk about eating at the potato, we mean maaser sheni. Maaser sheni didn't exist in the times of the Gemara, or most of the times of the Mishnah anymore, because then we don't eat it in Yerushalayim after the Beit Hamikdash is destroyed. Truma, on the other hand, for some time after the Beit Hamikdash was destroyed, they were still able, Koyanim and their families were still able to eat Truma, because they still had leftover Korah Druma ashes, you find in various places in the Gemara. They were still able to use it to become Tahor and to be able to eat Truma. So therefore, the Gemara mentions Truma, but yeah, the same din would apply to Maaser. Okay. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab. Rabbi Yechanan Amar Achla Beis Alay Tahara. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, she's not even Tahara as far as having relations with her husband. Okay. Amar Le Rabba Le Rab Nachman. The Rabba asked Rab Nachman, let's analyze it. Le Rab, the Amar Tahara Le Beis Alay Tahara Le Achla Beis Truma. And what's the logic of Rab that says she's Mutter to have relations with her husband, but she's also Teach Truma? What's the logic? Avoin Kores Husra Isur Misim Ibaya. If she's even mutter, something which would be chayav kares otherwise, until she toivels, if she and her husband have relations, they're chayav kares. How much more so that the isur misa of a person eating truma when they're tamei should be taken care of by this inadvertent tevila. Kares is stronger than misa b'dei shemayim. Rashi over here says that what it is that kares involves that not only the person dies young, but also their children die. Rashi brings from a pasuk in Kedoshim. Many other Rishonim disagree with that, and they say not necessarily. Kares does not in general involve the children dying, but there's other distinctions. Kares involves that the neshama is cut off, misa deshamayim just means the person dies young, there's different ages involved, there's whatever. If he does tshuva, does he have yisurim or not? There's a number of different things. Okay. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan is being consistent. The drilla didn't work at all, not for kares, not for misa deshamayim. But what's Rav's logic to say it works for an isur kares, but it doesn't work for an isur misa deshamayim? Amalei. So Rav Nachman answers him, the logic is like this. Baila chulin. To have relations with her husband, that doesn't involve kodshim. That's chulin. V'chulin, they boy come on. In other words, it's not something involving kodshim. Fine, but it's not something that involves kodshim or truma or what have you. V'chulin, they boy come on. To tovel for a chulin purpose does not require kavana. To tovel in order to be able to eat truma or maitha or whatever requires kavana. But to tovel for a chulin purpose does not require kavana.
Why
won't it kavana? But truma. We'll see. That's it. But umanah temra, so Rav Nachman continues, where do I get this from? This distinction, that chulin does not require kavana with the tefillah. So like this, Tznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Miklois, gal shemitlash, if a wave comes loose from the ocean, so imagine like it's very windy, you have like a high up wave, and all of a sudden the wind comes and blows part of that wave towards the shore or something. Oboya boinsa, and that wave contains 40 saw of water. The nuffle of the other malakadim, kalim, and then that wave falls on a person or on kalim that are there on the beach to hurt him. Then they become tar. Well, we're talking about the person. Actually, you bring up an interesting point, which is, I mean, in principle, of course, if they're dressed, you'd think it's a chitza, but it's an interesting point, actually. The Rebbe, there's a couple of igris from the Rebbe, from the Yud, and then there's also at least one tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think from around the same period, maybe the Chos, I don't know, that talk about how, the Rebbe starts talking about it like this. Like, in America, it's such a common thing that people go swimming, people go to the beach, people go to pools and whatever, and there's a tremendous amount of prisis in it. On the other hand, the Rebbe says, in a way, though, there's a certain advantage to it because it means that at least on some level, children born to these women, even though they're not otherwise Shem HaTorah or Mitzvah, are less likely to be Bnei Nida. Because somehow or other, you're going to have at some point, the woman, very, very likely at some point before she became pregnant, will have gone to the beach or will have gone to a pool or whatever. So, okay, the Rebbe writes in these letters. I mean, don't start publicizing this in front of the Amiya artist, otherwise they're going to think you don't have to go to the Mitzvah anymore. But that's the point. Apparently, the bathing suit is not such a chitza, because after all, water does get into it. Rav Moshe also has at least one shoga where he discusses a similar topic. He discusses, like this, in Masechta Kallah, for example, it says that a person should not marry a ben nidah or bas nidah. So what do you do nowadays with all the Baalei Teshuva out there with pastors? Their parents weren't careful on Taras Mishpacha. And Rav Moshe comes to somewhat the same conclusion, that since hayoyis are so common nowadays to go to the beach and to go to pools and whatever, fine, they were wearing a bathing suit. Fine, maybe it's not a kosher mikvah with all the hidurim and all that, but at least on a deraita level, at least enough to be able to be makel, and as we're saying in the Gemara over here, you don't need kavana for tefillah either, at least to be able to say that they're not a ben anida, at least that. Fine, it's not a matter of halacha that you're not allowed to marry them, but it's not a good idea to. So like this, so he's saying
that's only in summer. In winter, you don't see people go
to pools. In winter, you still have people go to pools. Still, you have people go to pools and whatever, yeah. Okay.
Indoor pools.
Yeah, indoor pools.
How many people go to pools?
Enough people. Okay. Yeah, you have. People pick winter, midwinter. Okay. Fine. Okay.
The same thing with Rabbi Akiva. He was a Baal Tshuva.
Yeah. Well, He was. I mean, he was an Amoris, but it doesn't mean that his parents weren't careful with Harris and Mishpacha. No, but Pashas is saying, yeah, Amoris were not necessarily careful with all the dinim of Tumah V'Tara, but Pashas, they kept Harris and Mishpacha. Okay. Anyway, let's go on. So, my love, Odom Dumya de Kalim. Now, since the Mishnah mentioned together people and Kalim, shouldn't that mean that apparently there is the Mishnah means to say that there's a certain similarity between them. Ma Kalim de Lemachavni. Now, the Kalim have no das, they have no kavana to become tahor with this wave falling on them, and nevertheless it works. Af adam nami leboi kavana. The same thing we see from that a person traveling doesn't require kavana. So there you go, for chulin, a person doesn't require kavana. However, the Gemara says, mimai. What, who says that's a valid proof? Dilma b'yoshiv ha-mustafa, maybe the missionary is talking about the case where the person is actually sitting there on the beach, waiting for the wave to come over him. Eimafai tola shagal, he's waiting, when is this wave going to be detached from the sea and then fall on him? And in that case, we could argue the other way around. Maybe the point of the Mishnah is the Kalim Yom Yad Adam. Maybe in that case, it's the other way around. Not the Adam is like the Kalim, but the Kalim maybe have to be like the Adam. Ma Adam de Be'in and Kavana. We would say that the person therefore needs Kavana, if that's how we're going to understand the Mishnah. Af Kalim Nami de Kavachav and the Adam. Maybe the Kalim also only works if the person actually put them there, having in mind that they're going to become Tahar. Now, how do you see from this Mishnah that Tzvila does not require Kavana? The chi tema, so you might answer, in that case, what's the chiddush? Obviously, if the person is sitting there intending for the wave to wash over him, obviously he'll be tahor. Maybe there's no chiddush in that. The answer is there is a chiddush in it. Maud tema, because you would think to say that nevertheless there's a different reason we should pass such a tefillah. Ligzer mishum chardolus shogsham. Maybe we should make a gzera that it wouldn't work because it's too easily confused with the case of toveling in a chardolus shogisham. Chardolus shogisham, and Rashi explains, and actually you have chardolus means like a doubt flow of water, like a waterfall or something down the side of a mountain. In fact, you have some of the goyim have a gear to chardolus. Rashi means from a high goyim, chardolus, it comes from the height of the mountain. Anyway, it's talking about you have water flowing down the slope of a mountain. That's possible for tovel in, because you don't have 40 so in one place. And the fact it's all connected together, so it's all flowing down together, that's called kataphras. It's flowing down a slope. Kataphras is not considered connected as far as Macquarie is so concerned. Therefore,
it's falling in a Niagara Falls.
Maybe you do, but the point is that you have kataphras. You have it flowing down the side of the mountain. So yeah, it's flowing down a slope. The part over here and the part over here and the part over here are not considered connected in halacha. Therefore, you don't have 40 saw in one place. Tosfos says you don't even need that. You have a different issue anyway, because we're talking about here about made shaman. We're talking about over here rainwater. Rainwater, to be kosher for a mikveh anyway, you can't have zoifel and it can't be flowing. It has to be still water. Only a mayan, only a spring is matired with zoifel. Which is, by the way, why you have the whole concept about turning off the filter when you go to a mikveh or whatever, because you have a problem, you have to make sure the mikveh is watertight, because you have a problem with zeichlin, otherwise you have a problem with the zeichlin means flowing. Just the opposite, it can't be zeichlin, it has to be. With rainwater, it has to be what's called a shvorin. That's all gathered in one place and then staying there. Okay, so that's another reason Herzl says to pass a chagla. So you would think, therefore...
It's not a mikveh,
No, but the water flows through the filter, so therefore...
It's another mile high.
No, yeah, right. If you're traveling on a mile, it's not an issue, right?
It's not pushing the water.
It is. Whatever. So the water is going into it, it's going out of it, whatever. And nowadays, they have filters. I don't know. They have the mixer by the oil, for example. They say they have a filter now that works even if it's on. Yeah, you have to sign them in.
It's
okay. Anyway. But
one of the reasons is there's always 44 connected to one another.
Doesn't matter, but yeah. Like, okay, so for example, by the Arizal mikveh, which is a spring, which comes from a spring, there you travel in Zeuchlin, there if you, anybody who's ever been to there knows the water flows in one end and flows out the other end. That's a solid thing of water. Okay.
The water is flowing, but the mikveh is full of water.
Yeah, but the point is, it's not, no, did that resolve what you're talking about? Fine, that's the point is, it's flowing in one end and out one end. If it was made shaman, that wouldn't work, but because it's made mayan, then it would. Anyway, the point is, so if a person is sitting and waiting for a wave to wash over him, maybe you should think that that's similar to chagulus, and then say that's possible. Or inami ligza resh roshin otokipin, or another problem, maybe we should say that you make a gzera, because the din is, you're not, the din is, that you are allowed to you're allowed to tovel in like this in a wave, but only the ends of the wave that are touching the ground. You're not allowed to if you have, let's say, as the wave is in the air, let's say you throw a keli into it, tevilah wouldn't work for it. Nothing happens. So you would think maybe you should make a zeder jashin or roshin or tukifin that you might make zeder that. You might mix up the roshin, the ends of it that are on the ground, the kippin, the part that's the arch that's above ground and not touching it.
What does that mean?
Meaning exactly that. You can tovel things in the people or kalim in the roshin, but not in the kippin. So maybe we should make a zera that if this person is, even this person is sitting there and waiting for the wave to wash over him, maybe we should say that's real as possible because maybe he won't realize that you can't tovel on the kippin. Mashmalunda, like this written. So that would be the chiddush of the Mishnah, then, that we don't make such a greater. Nothing to do with whether you need kavanah or not.
In other words,
it would work, but maybe only if he had kavanah, only if he's actually sitting there waiting for the wave to wash over him. You don't have any proof from
it. Saying it's kippin.
Once it lands on the ground, then it's not kippin anymore, that's rushing. Then it lands on the ground, then he's fine. Okay, how b'chlal do we know that you can't tovel in the arch part of the wave, the part above ground? The time of Vilun and another mission in McLeod. Macvillan Badosh and Macvillan Bakippin. Sha'in Macvillan Ba'aver, because the rule is you can't tovel in things that are in the air. Because where do you learn the whole concept of a mikveh or a mayan from? The pasuk mentioned mikveh, a gathering of water that's in the ground, and a burr, a mayan, all these things are in the ground, or, you know, on the ground, so therefore you don't have a source for a concept of toveling in the air. And therefore toveling on things in the air doesn't work. Okay.
He was sitting and the water came over him.
Yes.
What has it been there then?
So that's what we're saying. If he has kavanah, then it's definitely good. If he didn't have kavanah, that's what we're saying. We don't have proof one way or the other.
No, he's on the ground.
He's on the ground. So there's not
the earth.
He's waiting here, sitting on the ground. So therefore, there's the Russian land on him. So he's good. Okay, so we don't have a proof from that one way or the other about kavanah, about needing or not needing kavanah when it comes to tovel for cholim. Where do we get this concept that Rav Nachman was saying before, which we need in order to explain Rav Shitta, that for chulin purposes you don't need kavana in the tovling, and therefore we said this nida shenens of a tovla Rav had said his mother to have relations with her husband.
The person waiting for the water
waiting if he has kavana.
Right.
What we're talking about over here, yeah. So like this, it's not, because we have a Mishnah in Machshirin, where Masech the Machshirin is all about the concept of being Machshir the Kabbal Truma, of food being able to be Machshir the Kabbal Truma. And the Mishnah says, Teres Shinofel will say Amas Amayim, if fruit or produce, whatever, falls into a canal of water, or Poshat Misha Yodav Tneyes Benafon, and somebody whose hands are Tomei sticks out his hands and picks them up out of the water, no problem. Yodav Tahodas, first of all, his hands became Tahar, so that's the point. You don't need Kavana to Tovel, so even though he didn't have Kavana to Tovel his hands, nevertheless his hands are Tahar. For example, to wash the bread. The same way as usually we wash with a Keli, but technically you can also Tovel them in a Mikvah or anything that would count as a Mikvah. So like this, he Tovel his hands, so now they're Tahar, as far as eating bread, as far as whatever other purposes that a person needs Tahar hands for, yeah. So his hands are Tahar, showing that you don't need Kavana. And the peres are not makabel truma because the rule of kiyutan doesn't apply. Because we learned before that kiyutan is that the concept of being machshel makabel truma only applies when you wanted the thing to get wet. But here he didn't want the peres to get wet because they fell in when it happened. So therefore, on the other hand, the imbish will shiyut chuyadav. But if he stuck in his hand intending for them to get washed, also tahoras, if he took out the tahoras intending that his hands should get washed, then fine, tahoras, his hands are yod of tahoras, his hands are tahor, or peres b'chiyutan, then kiyutan does apply automatically to the peres, because he wanted that. So Rashi learns that what it means is, Because he wanted to wash his hands, therefore Rashi learns the water on his hands will now be able to be machshir these peres for kabbal truma. The water that's on them from them and themselves and fallen in there is not. But the fact that the water on his hands, many other rishis,
he put his hands in
intending to wash his hands. He knows that his hands are tahor, and he wants to wash them in the water to make them tahor. Meanwhile, he's also pulling out the food. Therefore, the water that's on his hands is kiyutan, because he wanted his hands to get wet. Therefore, it's able to be machshir the peres for kabbal truma. Yeah, the water on his hands goes onto the food. other Rishonim learn that it means the water on the food itself is machshir the makabel tumah. Okay.
You
need kavana, but well, the point is, for kiyutan, for being machshir the makabel tumah, you need kavana. But for sticking his hands in and making them tahor, we said you don't need kavana. Even if he's stuck in his hands only to get the food, then his hands are tahor. Therefore, we see from that that tovering his hands doesn't require kavana. That's the point. Because what's he tovering his hands for? To be able to eat bread or whatever, which is cholin.
But he knows that he has to tover his hands in order to eat. He has kavana.
No, but the point is, even if he didn't know that he knows his hands are tummy. He wants me to tire them. Later on, he's going to have a chance to eat. But the point is, even he didn't. He just stuck in his hands without realizing that by this he's going to be mitahar them. And now it happens. His hands are tahar. Later on, a minute later, when he wants to eat bread, then he's good.
That's the point.
That's the point. That you don't need kavana. That's the point.
Maybe it's just the hands.
Once we say for the hands, then it's just... So that explains. That's how we know, therefore, that Shvila Chacholin doesn't require Kavanah. Okay. I mean, we're going to continue with the discussion, but there is an interesting point, by the way, that the Rashba learns in our Gemara over here. Now, what would happen, let's say, so suppose the Peiros belonged to Reuven, and it was Shimon who stuck in his hands to get them. So when we're saying over here in the second case that the Peiros are the Kiyutam, the Peiros are Mokshal Kabal Tumah, would that work or not? He's not the owner of the Peiros. The Rashba learns, yeah, no. Since we said over here, Misha Yadav Tmeyat, doesn't say that he's the owner of the food, therefore it doesn't matter.
The Peiros, he's not interested in the
Peiros. So the Rambam learns that no, that only if the owner of the Peiros himself did it,
right.
You can't be Masha somebody else's Peiros without his dad.
Yeah,
the Rashba learns that doesn't matter. There's a letter, one of the Rebbe's early letters, where he analyzes this in terms of the different the context of the letter. There was a letter to Bolt Greenglass about the importance of Mishnayis Baal Peh, which was one of the early things that the Friedrich Rebbe was pushing when he first came to America. So the Rebbe wrote a long letter about what's the importance of learning Mishnayis Baal Peh, and the Seichat Rodem, the Rebbe talks about over there about the importance of Machshava that we have in different places in Halacha. You have different categories. You have things that can be accomplished only through Machshava, things that can be accomplished through machshava at the time of the maisa, things that require machshava together with the maisa, and things that then you have things where the machshava has to be on something that you own. So the Rashba may hold, therefore, that when it comes to it, the machshava, the kabbal tumah, this kind of thing is in the third category. It doesn't matter whether you own it or not, as long as you had a maisa as a machshava and you did a maisa, it doesn't matter whether it belonged to somebody else or not. Whereas the Rama might hold that it belongs in the fourth category only if you had a machshava on something that belongs to you. In connection with Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, we don't have any other Rishon other than the Rambam who deals with these things systematically. When Mashiach comes, again, the Sanhedrin may decide differently. Right? Okay. Eitz Vei Rava L'Rav Nachman. Okay, so Rava says to Rav Nachman, I have a contradiction to you. So you're telling me all this time that you have this proof that you don't have to tovel, that you don't have to have kavana when you're toveling for chulin purposes, only when you're toveling to eat maaser or truma or what happens. But We learn in Chagiga like this. Tova l'cholin v'chuchsa v'cholin. If somebody tovled intending to eat cholin, and now he has a chazaka, meaning that he had in mind during the Sevilla that he's going to be able to do that, fine. But also the meiser, he's still also to eat meiser, unless he tovled having in mind the meiser. Because the Chachamim made rules over there that for each higher thing you need to have in mind when you're tovling. Even your tovel for maaser and your tahor, as far as that's concerned, you would need kavana in order to see truma. From truma to kodshim, etc. Each one you need kavana. So implying chuchzak ein lo chuchzak lo. So apparently only if he's chuchzak, only if he had in mind that he's going to be eating cholin, then yes, if not, then not. So therefore, you see, you do need kavana for cholin. What kind of cholin are we talking about? By the way, we're talking about cholin al paras hakodesh, the kind of cholin that people, like we learned in the first parak, that people would eat, that people would be careful to eat in a state of tahara, as if they were kosher. Okay. The answer is no. Rav Nachman answers that loy hachikama. Oh, what the mission means is it means even if he had kavana for cholin, also the ma'aser. In other words, the mission is not saying he has to have kavana in order to be able to cholin on tahara kodesh. Kavana or not, he's tahara for cholin. But regardless, even if he had kavana, and you would say, well, he had kavana, that should mean it should count for something for ma'aser. No, it doesn't count for ma'aser. Okay. Fine. He asks him, okay, but then it continues over there. Tovel v'loy chuchzak, the end of that Mishnah says, if he's toveled and didn't do any chazaka, ke'ilu loy tovel, then it's as if he didn't tovel. My love, ke'ilu loy tovel, klav. According to it means it's as if he didn't tovel at all, meaning that even for cholin you need kavana. The answer is right. No, that's not what it means. Ke'ilu loy tovel l'maiser, aval tovel l'cholin. No, it just means as far as maiser, or anything higher than maiser, it doesn't count, but as far as cholin it counts. who savar d'choya kamatchalei. So Rava thought, okay, Rav Nachman is just pushing me off, he's just fobbing me off with an excuse. That can't possibly really be what, really mean what the mission, what that can't really be what the mission means.
That
to say that tovah v'lehuchsek, tilu l'tovah, means not that tilu l'tovah klal, but doesn't mean tilu l'tovah as far as ma'aser or anything higher. So Rava thought that's just a dichu. It means that he tovah but didn't have anything in mind without kavanah, right? So he thought that he's just doichem. He thought that it's not really a proper distinction. What about the thing before about tovah his hands? Maybe he would say there's a difference between tovah his hands and tovah his whole body. Nafak, but then Rava went out of the yeshiva. Doc, he checked in here, Bashkach, and sure enough, he found something that supports your Nachman's explanation. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Tov of a life, Mutal Lachul, and Vatal Amaisis. That's it. So therefore, it shows that clearly that Loi Huchsek still needs Mutal for Chulin, showing that you don't need Kavana as far as Chulin. Okay, good. So now Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, okay, now that we've proved from the Mishnah that you don't need Kavana for Chulin, now we're back to Rabbi Yochanan in that case. In that case, it seems we have a clear spirit of Rabbi Yochanan from this Mishnah that says that you don't need kavana for cholin, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying this nida who tovel without kavana is still also to her husband, which is for cholin. The answer is Amalei Rabbi Yochanan who do amak Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef. Fine, but Rabbi Yochanan has a tana who goes according to him, namely Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef. So he's following that opinion. The tanya, as we learn in a brayta, now. This braita is going to be talking about the concept of saras on clothing. We know the Torah tells us, the end of Parashat Tazria, if you find saras on clothing, so you go through the whole process over there, the kohen has to check it, if it's getting larger, if it stays the same for a couple of weeks or whatever, some cases you have to burn it, some cases you have to cut out the piece that had, rip out whatever the part that had saras and sew in a patch and whatever, you have a number of different cases over there, and then you have a case, over there where you have a case over there where you wash it, and washing in the psukim over there, sometimes it means washing, as in like laundering it, and sometimes it means tovering it. So you wash it, and the saras, and the saras dims, it becomes dimmer than one of the shades of saras, so it goes away entirely. So then the pasuk says, v'chubas shenis v'tahar. Then you wash it again, and there it means washing, as far as it means tovering it, and then it becomes tahar. So the first time is washing as in laundering, the second time is washing as in tovering. When the pasuk says that if you washed it and the saras went away, then it says v'chubas that you should wash it. So why does it have to say a second time? Obviously, it's the second time after the first washing.
What does it say in the pasuk?
The actual lashon is v'abeged or yashtia erev asher techabes. If it's washed, the stone mehem anoga and the nega goes away from it. V'chubas shenis, then it should be washed, meaning toivled again. V'tahar and it becomes tahar. So why does that say shenis? Obviously, it's the second time after the first time. Means makish tichbosis shniel tichbosis rishona. Means the pasuk is telling us a hekish between the second washing, which is in order to be mitaharet, with the first one, which was for Hester, which was to put it away for a week and see what happens with it. Namely, ma tichbosis rishona ladas, just like the first washing is ladas, and you know that because the pasuk says the tzibar koyin v'chidzu, that the koyin should command them to wash it and see what happens to the tzibar. So just like that one is ladas. The same way the second washing and then the tovling should be ladas, not just that it falls into the mitzvah by itself. That's why it says the word shame. E malahalam but in a das koyin, afan but in a das koyin. So you would think in that case, maybe the first time it has to actually be the koyin giving the order, so maybe the second time the koyin actually has to order it to be tovled. How do we know it works even if the Yisrael tovled it on his own? That's why the pasuk finishes off and it becomes tahor, which that's a rib, we mean it becomes tahor regardless whether the koyin was involved. So there has to be das, but not necessarily das koyin. So therefore, we see from that braisa, we see that tovling it requires das. The person has to have meant to tovel it, not just that it fell into the nidda. The same way, Rabbi Yochanan is saying with the nidda, that she has to have das, there has to be that she meant to tovel in order to be mutter to her husband. So now comes the relevance of this to our Gemara over here. Master sort of Shimbashi. Umi Omer Rabbi Yochanan Achi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that tevila requires kavana? Well, Amr Rabbi Yochanan halacha is stam mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan said, as a general rule, the halacha is like a stam mishnah, utnan, and we learned in our mishnah, noflastak in the shachta, that if a knife fell down and shechted on its way down, afmisha shachta kedav kapsula, so even if it did a proper shita, then it's possible. V'ha binan ba, and we asked at the beginning of the sugya, time of the nafla, that the only reason it's possible is because it fell on its own. Ha he pilahu, but if the person knocks it down, knowingly knocks it down, kshera, the apple gavdoloi mechaven, even though he didn't have tavana, ve'amrin, not the chef, he just had tavana to throw it down, right? Right, that's the point. Ve'amrin, and we said over there, man tana doloi boi kavana l'shchita, ve'amar ravar amnasin. Therefore, so our Mishnah implies, another, our Mishnah, which is a Stam Mishnah, is according to the opinion of Rav Nosson, that Shchita is kosher even if you didn't have Kavana. Why should Tevila be any different? And the reason, and there's actually a good reason to compare Shchita and Tevila, which is, both Shchita and Tevila are not, in they're mitzvahs, they're among the 613 mitzvahs, but they're not, they're two kinds of mitzvahs, I say. You have mitzvahs, I say, that you have to do regardless. You have to put on Tevila regardless, you have to keep Shabbos regardless. Then you have mitzvahs where you have this mitzvah if you want to be able to do something else. If you want to eat meat, you have to share. If you want to have relations with your spouse, then she has to go to the mitzvah. So those kinds of things are like a hechsher mitzvah. They're a mitzvah, but they're a mitzvah that's a prerequisite to doing something else. So therefore, if we say by shchita you don't need kavana, then you shouldn't need by tefillah either. By the way, the Ramban also talks about, now you have a machlokas in the Gemara in a few other places where the mitzvah tzrichas kavana. B'chal, for example, eating masa on Pesach, is a person yosa only if you had kavana to eat masa? Or what about the Gemara discusses over there, let's say, for example, goyim forcing to eat masa? Is he still yosa? No, you have to bake the masa, l'shem masa. But eating, not necessarily. Mitzvah ain't with kavana. He didn't necessarily make a bracha. Let's say the goyim forced him to eat it. He didn't make a bracha, nothing, but nevertheless, he had a machlokas in a few places in the Gemara, and the halacha is that it is. But over here, the Ramban, that he did yosa. But the Ramban points out that's not relevant over here because Rav and Rabbi Yochanan can argue because we're talking about over here about only about hechsher mitzvah, only a mitzvah that's prerequisite for something else, shchita or tevila. So Rav can take the view that even if you would normally say mitzvah tzrichas kavana, here it wouldn't. And Rabbi Yochanan could say the other way around. Even if you normally say mitzvah ain't tzrichas kavana, maybe for these kinds of things you do.
I would say if all of them you need kavana, the ones hechsher mitzvah you don't have.
Because you said hechsher mitzvah is weaker than a regular mitzvah. You're not shechting because you have to shech. You're shechting because you want
to
eat meat.
You have to
shech. No, you don't have to shech. You don't ever want to eat meat. You're not required to shech.
That's weaker.
Okay, that's the point. But in other words, that's the point. It's not a mitzvah to you. It's not a mitzvah that you're obligated to do no matter what.
So
therefore, Rav might say it's weaker and Rav Yechon might say it's stronger. Yeah.
Okay. Don't we pass in the mitzvah dangerous little
cup? That's the point. But nevertheless, yeah. Okay, but over here, yeah. Okay. The answer is, b'shchita afilu Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef, Modi says on the side. When it comes to shchita, it's different. Even Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef, who holds that by tzvila, you need kavana, he would hold shchita as different. And why? Midigali rachmanim is asik the kodshim postel. Given that the Torah tells us clearly, which we learned in Zvachim, we also learned earlier in our Masechta, that misasik the kodshim is postel, but if you shech kodshim without having intention to shech them, then they're postel, because the postel says, l'sfoindicham tizvachu, which means l'daitim tizvachu, so only by kodshim, you have to have that. Miklal d'cholon l'boyin kabana, implying by cholon you don't need kabana. The Rabbanon, what would the Rabbanon answer to that? Because we said the Rabbanon disagree with Rav Nosson and said that it is possible. They would say, he's the Eloi written Kavana was Zricha. They would say, like the distinction he made, I don't know, fine, you don't need Kavana for actual shechting, L'chaticha Be'inen, but at least you have to have Kavana that you're going to be doing cutting. Here, you knock down a knife. When you threw a knife, you weren't even intending to cut anything. The Chum say, well, that would be different. Even by holding that would be possible. Omar Rava behold the Chanu Rav Nosson and Rabban. So Rava says in this connection, in this argument, Rav Nosson has a better of the Chachamim. He has a better argument over the Chachamim that you shouldn't even need kavana for cutting. Exactly. Miksi b'chasachta. The pasuk isn't saying anything about cutting. There's a machdef. See, the pasuk says you should check. But ibe inan kavana lahaticha. If you're going to say like the Chachamim that you need kavana to actually cut something. Well then, why only cutting? You know, why only cutting? After all, zvicha namely boys, and you should go the whole way and say you need kavana for actual zvicha, for an actual act of shechting. And if you don't eat one or the other, you can't split the difference and say that you only need kavana for chaticha and not for zvicha. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay. So far, what we have then is that we've explained Rav's opinion and we've explained Rabbi Yechanan's opinion. Rav's opinion is based on the idea that you don't need kavana for tovelin and cholin. Rabbi Yechanan's opinion is based on the idea that you do. However, even Rabbi Yechanan and even Even Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yonasan, but Ben Yosef, will agree that Shechita is different than Tevila. In that regard, you don't need Kavana for Shechita. The Chachamim will say you do, Rabbi Nachman says you don't, and the Halacha is like Rabbi Nachman. Okay.
Why do you don't
say you do?
Because the Chachamim said, because the Chachamim would say that you do, because they would hold that it's similar to Tevila. They didn't say, yeah, it's true, the Gemara didn't give a reason for that.
And most Chachamim, the knife fell down.
Could be, because they said it's like Tevila. Yeah. What?
The knife fell down.
It fell down for sure.
It's what?
For sure it's possible. No question about it. It's all that.
What did the Mishnah say?
The Mishnah said, Nafla Taka.
Nafla, what did it say?
And it's possible. And it's possible.
Possible.
We were discussing the question, what if he knocked it down deliberately? Okay. So now, we have to ask, what is the scenario? We started out the discussion by saying a Nidah who was forced to tell you. What do you mean she was forced? He learned on the Chavit of Atala. Do you mean that her friend forced her to tovel, that her friend pushed her into the water, let's say?
She was forced.
So what does it mean? Does it mean that her friend pushed her under the water? Then what's the problem? Of course it was kavana. Kavana the chavacha, kavana mal yisihi. First of all, her friend's kavana is good enough, kavana. The same way as we said before that a chera shirt of a cotton can be shechting and other people can be watching, and that works. And even the chachamim agree to that. And Tevila would be the same. Yeah, but oid, and not only that, the truma nami offa. As a matter of fact, if a woman is made to toivel by some other person, then actually not only to be mutter to her husband, it would be where it would work. Even as far as truma would work, it's not. As we learn in a Mishnah in Mida, a chersher sa shoyte vahtuma, a chersher, a deaf mute woman, sa shoyte, or one a shoyte, who doesn't have deranged. That summa, or a woman who's blind, the problem with her being blind is she can't do her own bedikas because she can't see whether there's anything on there on the form. But she nitra for daita, or also where she's deranged, it's not quite the same thing as shaita, but in other words also where she doesn't know what she's doing. In yeshla and pitchas metachnas oisan, if they have friends who are pitchas, members of their household, whatever, who are pitchas, who are normal, healthy women, who are able to be metachnas oisan, they're able to check their bedikas course, they're able to figure out when they're able to figure out when they're vestis and whatever it should be, and then when they need to be separated from their husband and when they need to go to the mikveh or not. So then good, oichos v'tumah. Then that chershus or shoyto or whatever, if she's a wife of a kohen or daughter of a kohen, will be able to eat, or the wife of a kohen, yeah, will be able to eat tumah. So you see from that one person's kavana helps for another person. So it can't mean nidush and nansa means that another woman forced her into the water. So Papa says what it means is like, Rav Nosson, it would mean Shanafla Minagesher. According to Rav Nosson, who said by Shchita that even if you knock down the knife, even if you had no intention to shech, then it's still kosher because it was Koyach Adam. So the case would be talking about it, but here, let's say the woman fell off a bridge. So she had no intention to go into the water at all. But nevertheless, because she went into the water, then therefore, Rav is saying it's good enough for her husband, to be mutter to her husband. All of Rabbanon, according to the Rabbanon, who disagree with Rav Nosson, it would be she yorda lahokir. The case would be where she went into the water to just cool off part of her body. So she wanted to just rinse off or cool off a couple of parts of her body, and she ended up falling in all the way. So that would be similar to the Rabbanon, where the person intended to cut and ended up shacking.
She didn't have the intention
to put her whole body into the water, but nevertheless her whole body ended up in the water.
So even the Rabbanon would agree,
again, according to Rav, that would be a valid tevila, at least insofar as being mutter to her husband. Now, who is the halacha like?
Truma wouldn't,
because truma you definitely need kavana. So who is the halacha like? Does tevila for a woman to be mutter to her husband require kavana or not? For many of the poskim paskim like Rav, that it is fine for her husband. On the other hand, in Shulchan Aruch it brings, because you have some of the Rishonim who hold that instead the halacha should be like Rabbi Yochanan, then therefore, if a woman tovel without kavana, then better she should go and tovel again without a bracha, the Shach says, because you can't make a bracha on something that you're not necessarily obligated to do, but she should tovel again. If she didn't, then b'diavad, fine. That was the point from those letters of the Rebbe and Rebbe Feinstein about women who go to the beach or the pool or whatever, where obviously there's no kavana for tevila, and nevertheless we're saying, as a b'diavad, she b'diavad, it works. But mahatchila, if a woman is in that situation, she told her, let's say, like the case we have, she fell off a bridge into the water, better she should tovel again having kavana to tovel.
Even though she has clothes on?
So if she has clothes on, it depends.
Really,
in principle, it depends whether they're tight-fitting clothes or not. Mm-hmm. However, again, bathing suits are fairly tight-fitting, but on the other hand, the water does get into them. You know, when you wear a bathing suit, you come out all wet, all over, even the parts that were covered. So, again, it's not a halachic thing, but we're talking about the ethical thing. Okay.
Oh, sure.